Welcome once more to the Software Delivery Notebook. You've given us some really interesting material this time, all about deployment pipelines. We're going to map them out, figure out how to improve them, and hopefully uncover some aha moments for you along the way.
Deployment pipelines are truly at the heart of continuous delivery, so let's dive right in.
Before we get into the specifics, can you give us a quick overview of what a deployment pipeline actually is?
Sure. Think of it as a carefully designed path that your code takes from the moment a developer writes it to the moment it goes live for your users. Every step along this path, from building the code to testing it and deploying it, is ideally automated and repeatable. This ensures consistency, reduces the risk of errors, and allows for incredibly fast and frequent deployments.
Okay, that makes sense. But why should someone listening care about all of this? What's the real benefit for them?
Well, have you ever heard the phrase, "work smarter, not harder"? That's essentially what a well-oiled deployment pipeline allows you to do. High-performing software teams deploy code frequently, sometimes multiple times a day, without sacrificing quality. They have shorter lead times, meaning they can get new features and bug fixes out to users faster, and they experience fewer failures. All of those things lead to happier teams, happier customers, and ultimately, a more successful business.
So it's not just about speed, it's about quality and efficiency across the board.
Precisely. And the beauty of it is that you don't need to have a brand new, perfectly architected system to benefit from a deployment pipeline.
So even if you're working with a legacy system, you can still implement this.
Absolutely. The key is to start small and focus on continuous improvement. You don't need to boil the ocean all at once. The source you provided even mentions this interesting concept called a walking skeleton.
A walking skeleton? That sounds intriguing. What is that exactly?
It's essentially a bare bones version of your system, containing just enough to demonstrate the core functionality. It's like a simplified blueprint you can use to build your first pipeline around. This allows you to get a feel for the process and start reaping the benefits of continuous delivery without having to overhaul your entire system overnight.
That's a really smart approach, especially for those who might be feeling overwhelmed by the idea of implementing a pipeline from scratch. Now, the material also mentions these 7 pillars of continuous delivery. Can you tell us more about those?
Think of them as the foundational capabilities you need for continuous delivery to truly thrive. They are continuous integration, continuous testing, continuous monitoring, observability, loosely coupled architecture, database change management, and trunk-based development. Having a solid understanding of these principles is crucial for building a resilient and efficient pipeline.
So this is where someone listening could assess their own systems and see where they might need to focus their efforts.
Exactly. For example, if you're struggling with slow and error-prone deployments, it might be worth examining your testing practices or looking into how you can create a more loosely coupled architecture.
That's really helpful for understanding where to start. Now, I love how this isn't just about technical processes. It's about strategy, too. The source talks about this idea of reinvesting your gains. Can you explain what that means in this context?
It's a crucial point that often gets overlooked. As you improve your deployment pipeline, you inevitably start to see gains. You save time through automation, you deliver higher quality software, and your team becomes more motivated and engaged. The key is to view these gains not just as happy accidents, but as valuable assets that can be reinvested to fuel further improvements.
So it's like a virtuous cycle.
Exactly. The more you invest in improving your pipeline, the more you gain, and the more you can reinvest those gains to make even more progress.
So what does that look like in practice for someone listening?
It could be something as simple as tracking the time saved through automation and using that time to implement a new testing tool or to invest in training for your team. Or it could be about allocating a specific budget for continuous improvement initiatives. The important thing is to recognize that the journey doesn't end with building a pipeline. It's about constantly striving to make it better.
It's about making continuous improvement part of your team's DNA. I love that. Now, before we get too far ahead of ourselves, the source really stresses that this isn't about creating some perfect pipeline overnight. Can you talk a little bit about that?
You've hit the nail on the head. There's a wonderful quote from Arthur Ashe that captures this perfectly. Start where you are, use what you have, do what you can. It's a reminder that progress is more important than perfection. You don't need to have all the answers or the fanciest tools to get started.
It's about taking those first steps, learning along the way, and iteratively improving your process over time.
Exactly. Don't let the pursuit of perfection become the enemy of good. The most important thing is to start, to learn, and to keep moving forward.
Small steps, big impact, right? Okay, let's get into the nitty-gritty of how a deployment pipeline actually works. The source outlines a basic four-stage pipeline. Can you walk us through those stages?
Of course. The first stage is the commit stage. This is where developers integrate their code changes frequently, ideally multiple times per day. The key here is to minimize the risk of integration issues by keeping those changes small and testing them thoroughly. There's even this concept of a 10-minute rule, where if a developer can't fix a problem within 10 minutes, they should revert their changes.
Wow, 10 minutes. That really emphasizes the need for a fast and efficient testing process.
Absolutely. Automated testing is crucial for making this work. It provides that safety net that allows developers to move quickly and confidently.
So what happens after the commit stage?
Next comes the build stage. This is where we take the committed code and create a single canonical package that will be used for deployments across all environments. This ensures consistency and eliminates the risk of introducing variations between different stages of the pipeline.
So no more rebuilding the code for each environment, which could introduce errors.
Exactly. Consistency is key here.
Okay, so we've committed our code, we've built our package. What happens next?
Now, it's time for the acceptance stage. This is where the software goes through rigorous testing in an environment that mirrors production as closely as possible. We run a full suite of automated tests, including functional tests and those that test for quality attributes like performance and security. This stage acts as a gatekeeper, ensuring that only high-quality code moves on to the final stage.
So this is where we separate the wheat from the chaff.
Precisely. And this is also where any necessary manual testing should be performed. The key here is that by this stage, the code has already passed through multiple layers of automated testing, so manual testing can be focused and efficient, targeting any remaining edge cases or specific user scenarios that haven't been covered by automation.
That makes a lot of sense. It allows you to really target your manual testing efforts where they'll have the most impact. All right, final stage. We've made it to production. This is the big moment, right?
It is. This is where we finally get to deliver the value of all our hard work to our users. The goal is to make deployments to production as frequent and seamless as possible. Ideally, they should be fully automated and take under 30 minutes.
Wow, under 30 minutes. That's impressive. So does that mean every time we deploy to production, our users immediately see those changes?
Not necessarily. And this is where things get even more interesting. The source emphasizes the importance of decoupling deployment from release. And this is where feature toggles come into play.
Feature toggles, tell me more about those.
Imagine this. You've got a new feature that's ready to go, but you're not quite ready to launch it to all your users just yet. Maybe you want to wait for a specific marketing campaign, or you want to do a controlled rollout to a small subset of users first.
Or maybe you just want to have the option to quickly turn the feature off if there's a problem.
Exactly. That's the beauty of feature toggles. They allow you to deploy code to production without actually releasing the features to users. Think of it like a light switch. You can deploy the wiring and the light bulb, but you don't have to turn the light on until you're ready.
That's a brilliant analogy. It gives you so much flexibility and control over your releases. You can even use feature toggles to test new features with a small group of users before rolling them out more broadly.
Absolutely. They are a powerful tool for managing risk and ensuring a smooth user experience.
So we've covered the four stages of a basic pipeline: commit, build, acceptance, and production. It seems straightforward enough, but I imagine there's a lot more to it than meets the eye.
There is indeed. Building the pipeline is just the first step. The real art and science of continuous delivery lies in continually identifying and addressing the constraints that hold your pipeline back.
That sounds like a great place to pick up in part two of our deep dive.
You're absolutely right. Building a pipeline is just the starting point. The real magic happens when we start to systematically improve it. This is where we put on our detective hats and start looking for those bottlenecks that are slowing us down.
So how do we go about finding these bottlenecks? Where do we even begin to look?
Well, the source you shared draws on a concept called the theory of constraints. It's a powerful idea that can be applied to all sorts of systems, including software delivery pipelines. The basic premise is that any system's performance is limited by its weakest link.
So it's like a chain, only as strong as its weakest link.
Precisely. So the key to improving the overall performance of your pipeline is to identify that weakest link, that constraint, and focus your efforts on strengthening it. Once you've addressed that constraint, you move on to the next one, and so on. It's a continuous process of identifying and eliminating bottlenecks.
So what kind of constraints might we encounter in a deployment pipeline?
The source material breaks them down into three main categories: tools, people, and policy.
Okay, let's break those down. What might a tool's constraint look like?
It could be a lack of automation for repetitive tasks. Maybe you're still manually deploying code to certain environments, or you're relying on patchwork of scripts that are difficult to maintain and scale. Or perhaps you're missing a key tool altogether, something that could automate a time-consuming process or provide valuable insights into your pipeline's performance.
So a tool's constraint is essentially anything related to the technology and infrastructure we're using to build and deploy our software.
Exactly. Now let's move on to people. What kind of constraints might we encounter in this category?
Well, I can imagine a lack of skills or experience could be a major bottleneck. If your team isn't familiar with the principles of continuous delivery, or they don't have the expertise to implement certain automation tools, that's going to slow you down.
Absolutely. But it's not just about individual skills. The way teams are structured and how they communicate can also create constraints. For example, if you have siloed teams that don't collaborate effectively, that can lead to delays and handoffs that introduce friction into the process.
It's like that old saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together.
Exactly. And then, of course, there's the human factor. Sometimes people are resistant to change, even if that change is ultimately for the better. They may be comfortable with the way things are currently done, even if it's inefficient or error-prone. Overcoming these ingrained mindsets can be a significant challenge.
That makes sense. People can be creatures of habit. Okay, so we've covered tools and people. What about policy? What kind of constraints might fall under that category?
Policy constraints often stem from organizational structures, regulations, or even just ingrained ways of working. Think about things like lengthy approval processes, rigid change management procedures, or even just a general lack of trust in automated systems. These things can create significant bottlenecks and slow down the entire pipeline.
And I bet these can be some of the trickiest constraints to address because they involve changing not just technology or processes, but also people's mindsets and organizational culture.
You're absolutely right. And the source material highlights a particular policy constraint that's been shown to be especially detrimental to pipeline performance. External approvals.
External approvals. You mean when someone outside the development team has to sign off on every change before it can be deployed?
Exactly. And research has shown that these external approvals actually slow down deployments, increase lead times, and don't even improve quality or reduce failure rates. In fact, they often have the opposite effect because they create a false sense of security and discourage teams from investing in automated quality checks.
Wow, that's really eye-opening. It's a great example of how seemingly well-intentioned policies can actually hinder progress.
Precisely. So if you're listening and you're struggling with external approvals in your own pipeline, this research might be helpful ammunition to make the case for streamlining your approval processes.
It's all about using data to drive better decision-making. Now, the source also talks about the dangers of batches. Can you explain what that means in the context of a deployment pipeline?
You got it. Batching refers to the practice of grouping a bunch of changes together for deployment. While it might seem efficient on the surface because you're deploying less often, it actually creates a number of hidden problems.
Interesting. What kind of problems?
Firstly, batching hides constraints. If you're only deploying every few weeks or months, it's harder to see which parts of the process are slowing you down. It's like trying to find a needle in a haystack.
So it's like sweeping problems under the rug.
Exactly. And the bigger the batch, the bigger the rug. Secondly, batching increases risk. If you deploy a large batch of changes and something goes wrong, it can be very difficult to pinpoint the root cause and roll back the changes safely. You're essentially putting all your eggs in one basket.
And if that basket falls, you've got a big mess on your hands.
You got it. And finally, batching goes against the fundamental principles of continuous delivery, which emphasizes small, frequent deployments that allow you to get feedback quickly and iterate rapidly.
So how do we avoid the trap of batching? What's the alternative?
The ideal scenario is to reduce your batch size to, well, one.
A batch size of one. So every single change flows through the pipeline individually.
Exactly. It might sound counterintuitive, but it actually makes the entire process much smoother and more efficient.
I can see how it would reduce risk and make it easier to pinpoint the root cause of problems. But how do we actually achieve a batch size of one? It seems like that would require a lot of automation and a very streamlined process.
You're absolutely right. Achieving a batch size of one requires a significant investment in automation and a culture of continuous improvement. It's not something that happens overnight.
So where do we start? How do we begin to identify those areas where we can reduce batch sizes and make our pipeline more efficient?
Well, the source material provides a helpful framework for thinking about this. It talks about two main categories of constraints, those that impact quality and those that impact frequency.
Okay, let's dive into those. What kind of constraints might impact the quality of our deployments?
Some common culprits are missing tests, manual deployments, and handcrafted environments. If you're not adequately testing your code at every stage of the pipeline, you're introducing the potential for errors that could slip through to production.
Right, and manual deployments are always risky because they introduce the potential for human error.
Exactly. And handcrafted environments can be a nightmare because they're often inconsistent and difficult to replicate. This makes it harder to test your code thoroughly and increases the risk of problems arising in production.
So, the key to improving quality is to automate as much of the process as possible and ensure that we have a robust suite of tests running at every stage of the pipeline.
Precisely. Now let's move on to constraints that impact frequency. What kind of things might be slowing down our ability to deploy code quickly and frequently?
Well, lengthy code reviews can definitely be a bottleneck. If you're waiting days or even weeks for someone to review your code, that's going to add significant delays to the process.
Absolutely. And we've already talked about the dangers of manual approval steps, especially those that involve external stakeholders.
Right. Those external approvals can really grind things to a halt.
They can indeed. And another common culprit is the use of too many branches or long-lived branches in your version control system.
Can you explain why that's a problem?
Remember those seven pillars of continuous delivery we talked about earlier? Well, one of those pillars is trunk-based development. This is a practice where everyone on the team works on the main branch of the code rather than creating separate branches for every feature or bug fix.
Okay, so trunk-based development is like having everyone working on the same document at the same time.
That's a good analogy. It keeps everyone in sync, reduces the risk of those painful merge conflicts, and makes it much easier to integrate changes frequently. When you have a lot of branches or long-lived branches, it creates complexity and makes it harder to deploy code quickly and safely.
So trunk-based development is all about streamlining the development process and removing those branching-related bottlenecks.
Exactly. It's a key enabler for achieving a high deployment frequency.
This is all starting to paint a really clear picture of how all these different pieces fit together. We've got the four stages of the pipeline, the three categories of constraints, and now these seven technical capabilities that underpin it all. It's like a complex puzzle that's slowly starting to come together.
That's a great way to put it. And remember, those seven technical capabilities we mentioned earlier are crucial for addressing these constraints and achieving true continuous delivery.
Right. Can you remind us what those capabilities are again and how they relate to constraint removal?
Of course. The first one is continuous integration, which we already touched on earlier. This is the practice of integrating code changes frequently, ideally multiple times per day. This helps to catch integration issues early and reduces the risk of those painful merge conflicts.
So continuous integration is all about preventing those integration hell scenarios where you spend hours or even days trying to merge code from different branches.
Exactly. It's about keeping the code base in a constantly releasable state. The next capability is continuous testing. This means automating your tests as much as possible and running them at every stage of the pipeline.
So instead of relying on manual testing, which can be time-consuming and error-prone, we automate those tests so they can be run quickly and consistently.
Precisely. And continuous testing isn't just about functional tests. It's also about testing for quality attributes like performance, security, and usability. The goal is to build a comprehensive suite of automated tests that give you confidence that your code is ready for production.
This is where those tools we were talking about earlier come into play, right? You need the right tools to automate those tests effectively.
Absolutely. And the third capability is continuous monitoring. This means having systems in place to track the health and performance of your applications in production.
So it's not just about getting the code out the door, it's about making sure it's working properly once it's live.
You got it. Continuous monitoring allows you to detect problems early before they impact your users, and it gives you the data you need to make informed decisions about how to improve your applications and your pipeline.
This is all starting to make a lot of sense. It's not just about speed. It's about building a robust and resilient system that delivers value to users consistently and reliably. What are the other four capabilities?
The fourth capability is observability. It's all about having deep insights into your systems and being able to understand how they are behaving, especially when things go wrong. Observability goes beyond traditional monitoring by providing context and helping you understand the why behind the what.
So it's not just about knowing that something is broken, it's about understanding why it's broken and how to fix it.
Exactly. Observability helps you identify the root cause of problems faster and make more informed decisions about how to improve your systems. It's like having X-ray vision into your applications.
That's a great analogy. Okay, what about the fifth capability?
The fifth capability is having a loosely coupled architecture. This means designing your systems in a way that allows different components to be developed, tested, and deployed independently. This reduces dependencies and makes it easier to make changes without impacting other parts of the system.
So instead of having a monolithic application where everything is tightly interconnected, we break it down into smaller, more modular components.
Precisely. A loosely coupled architecture makes it easier to make changes quickly and safely, and it reduces the risk of cascading failures.
This sounds crucial for achieving that batch size of one we were talking about earlier. If you can deploy individual components independently, you don't have to wait for everything else to be ready.
Yeah. Exactly. Loosely coupled architecture is a key enabler for continuous delivery.
Okay, two more to go. What's the sixth capability?
The sixth capability is database change management. This is about having a structured and automated process for managing changes to your database schemas.
So it's not just about managing the code, it's also about managing the data that the code relies on.
Precisely. Database changes can be tricky because they can impact the integrity and performance of your applications. Having a robust process for managing these changes is crucial for ensuring that your deployments go smoothly and your data remains consistent.
That makes a lot of sense. And finally, we have the seventh capability, which is
trunk-based development, which we already discussed earlier. Remember, this is the practice of having everyone on the team work on the main branch of the code, rather than creating separate branches for every feature or bug fix.
Right. So by mastering these seven technical capabilities, we can effectively address those constraints that are slowing down our pipeline and hindering our ability to deliver software quickly and reliably.
Exactly. It's all connected. These capabilities are like the building blocks of a high-performing continuous delivery pipeline.
This has been incredibly helpful, but before we wrap up this part, I want to touch on one more crucial point that the source material emphasizes: the role of automation.
Yes, automation. It's often seen as the holy grail of continuous delivery, but it's important to remember that it's not the end goal in itself.
Right, it's a means to an end.
Precisely. Automation is a tool that allows us to free ourselves from repetitive, low-value tasks and focus on the things that truly require human ingenuity. Things like innovation, design, and strategic thinking.
So instead of spending hours manually deploying code or running tests, we can automate those tasks and use that time to focus on building better products and delivering more value to our users.
Exactly. Automation allows us to work smarter, not harder.
That's a great way to put it. So if someone is listening to this and they're thinking about how to improve their own pipeline, what advice would you give them about automation?
I would encourage them to take a close look at their current processes and identify those tasks that are ripe for automation. Are there any manual deployments that could be automated? Are there any tests that could be run automatically? Are there any reports that could be generated automatically?
So it's about looking for those repetitive, time-consuming tasks that are currently being done manually and figuring out how to automate them.
Exactly. And the beauty of automation is that it not only saves time and reduces errors, but it also frees up your team to focus on more creative and strategic work.
It's about empowering your team to do their best work.
Precisely.
This has been an incredible deep dive into the world of deployment pipelines. We've covered so much ground, from the four stages of a basic pipeline to the three categories of constraints, the seven technical capabilities, and the crucial role of automation.
And we've only just scratched the surface.
I know, right? It's amazing how much there is to learn about this topic, but I think we've laid a solid foundation for understanding the key principles and practices of continuous delivery.
I agree. We've given our listeners a lot to think about.
And hopefully some actionable takeaways that they can apply to their own pipelines. But before we wrap up this part of our deep dive, I want to reiterate one key point that the source material really drives home. The ultimate purpose of a deployment pipeline is to create a single, authoritative mechanism for getting changes into production.
That's a great point to emphasize. The pipeline becomes the trusted path for all changes, ensuring consistency, quality, and speed.
And that means no more ad hoc deployments, no more cutting corners for urgent releases. Everything flows through the pipeline, which acts as a gatekeeper, ensuring that only high-quality, thoroughly tested code makes it to production.
Exactly. And the pipeline should be designed to catch unfit-for-release changes as early as possible, whether it's a functional bug, a security vulnerability, or a performance bottleneck. This is crucial for maintaining the integrity of your systems and ensuring a smooth user experience.
So approvals are still important, but they should be integrated into the pipeline itself, either automated or handled within the team, rather than relying on external stakeholders to sign off on every change.
Precisely. We want to eliminate those external bottlenecks that slow things down and discourage teams from taking ownership of their deployments.
Ideally, the entire process, from commit to production, should be quick enough to happen multiple times a day if needed. That's the true hallmark of continuous delivery.
It is. It's a testament to the power of embracing new ideas, challenging old assumptions, and continuously striving for improvement.
It's incredible to think about how much the software development landscape has changed. We've gone from infrequent, high-risk releases to a world where deployments can happen almost continuously, with confidence and speed.
It's a truly exciting time to be in software development. The possibilities are endless.
Okay, I think we're ready to move on to part three of our deep dive, where we'll explore some of the key takeaways and actionable insights that our listeners can apply to their own pipelines.
It really is remarkable how far we've come in the world of software delivery. We've gone from these monolithic releases that were fraught with risk and anxiety to a place where we can deploy changes frequently, reliably, and with confidence.
It's a real testament to the power of continuous improvement and the willingness to embrace new ways of working. So as we wrap up this deep dive into deployment pipelines, what are some of the key takeaways that you think will be most valuable for our listeners?
Well, I think one of the most important things to remember is that building a deployment pipeline is not a one-time project. It's a journey of continuous improvement. There's always going to be room for optimization, new tools to explore, and better ways to automate and streamline your processes.
It's about embracing that mindset of always looking for ways to get better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to start small. You don't need to have a perfectly architected system or a fully automated pipeline from day one. Remember that concept of the walking skeleton we talked about earlier?
Right. That bare bones version of your system that you can use to build your first pipeline around.
Exactly. It's a great way to get started and to start experiencing the benefits of continuous delivery without feeling overwhelmed.
So start small, iterate, and continuously improve. What else should our listeners keep in mind?
I would say another crucial takeaway is the importance of identifying and addressing constraints. Remember those three categories we talked about: tools, people, and policy.
Of course. Those are the bottlenecks that can slow down your pipeline and prevent you from achieving your continuous delivery goals.
Exactly. So take some time to analyze your own pipeline and see where those constraints might be lurking. Are there any manual processes that could be automated? Are there any skills gaps within your team that need to be addressed? Are there any organizational policies or procedures that are creating unnecessary bottlenecks?
Once you've identified those constraints, you can start to develop a plan for addressing them one by one.
Precisely. And remember, those seven technical capabilities we discussed earlier can be incredibly helpful in overcoming these constraints.
Right. Continuous integration, continuous testing, continuous monitoring, observability, loosely coupled architecture, database change management, and trunk-based development. Mastering these capabilities is essential for achieving high performance in continuous delivery.
Absolutely. They are the foundation of a robust and efficient pipeline.
And let's not forget about the power of automation.
Yes. Automation. It's a key enabler for continuous delivery. But remember, it's not the end goal in itself.
Right. It's a means to an end.
Precisely. Automation is a tool that allows us to free ourselves from repetitive, low-value tasks and focus on the things that truly require human ingenuity. Things like innovation, design, and strategic thinking.
So instead of spending hours manually deploying code or running tests, we can automate those tasks and use that time to focus on building better products and delivering more value to our users.
Exactly. Automation allows us to work smarter, not harder.
That's a great way to put it. So as you're thinking about how to improve your pipeline, look for those tasks that are ripe for automation. Those repetitive, time-consuming tasks that are currently being done manually.
Exactly. And the beauty of automation is that it not only saves time and reduces errors, but it also frees up your team to focus on more creative and strategic work.
It's about empowering your team to do their best work.
Precisely.
And that brings us to the end of our deep dive into deployment pipelines. It's been a fascinating journey, exploring the key principles and practices that underpin continuous delivery. From the four stages of a basic pipeline to the three categories of constraints, the seven technical capabilities, and the crucial role of automation, we've covered a lot of ground.
We certainly have, and I hope our listeners have gained some valuable insights that they can apply to their own software delivery processes.
Remember, building a successful deployment pipeline is an ongoing process. It's about embracing that mindset of continuous improvement, always looking for ways to optimize, automate, and streamline your workflow.
It's about creating a system that empowers your team to deliver high-quality software quickly, reliably, and with confidence.
And most importantly, it's about delivering value to your users continuously and consistently.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Till next time.
Happy deploying!